continue our discussions with the conceptual framework. And I give the floor to Rachel.
Thank you very much, Hans. Good morning, everyone. The session this morning, we have 2 hours to talk conceptual framework, and we're going to be splitting it into two. We're going to kick off with a discussion about strategy and our proposed approach to the conceptual framework going forward, which is agenda paper number 2, and the following papers, which are an extract from the board papers and the comment letter analysis that we presented to the board back in March. The second half of this will be a paper that has been prepared by EFRAG, which is discussing potential changes that we could make to the measurement chapter of the conceptual framework. So we'll start with the overall strategy, and I'll hand over to Julia to take you through that.
Thank you, Rachel. Good morning, everyone. As you know, in March, we presented to the board a summary of feedback on the exposure draft, and we also provided a summary of feedback to you in preparation for this meeting. In April, we plan to discuss with the board the strategy for finalizing the conceptual framework, and in particular on such areas as measurement and profit or loss and OCI. In February, we provided a summary of feedback to the advisory council and asked for their advice on strategy for finalizing the conceptual framework. The advisory council broadly supported finalizing conceptual framework without delay. They stated that proposals in the exposure draft are an improvement compared to existing conceptual framework, and that the revised conceptual framework is needed without delay. They acknowledged that some areas, such as measurement and profit or loss and OCI, could be developed further, but they thought that the proposals in the exposure draft represent a step forward, and that the board could come back and update the conceptual framework in the future, if necessary. Some members of the advisory council supported treating conceptual framework as a living document that is updated as necessary, whereas some other members cautioned the board against making too frequent and excessive revisions to the conceptual framework so that not to undermine its credibility. So today, we would like to seek your advice on finalizing the conceptual framework. We welcome your advice on all aspects for the strategy, but in particular, which topics do you think we should focus on in re-deliberations? What do you think should be the strategy for topics such as measurement and profit or loss and OCI? And we also have EFRAG's paper later on today, which makes some proposals how measurement section could be expanded. Do you support exploring distinction between liabilities and equity in a separate research project? What are views on the project type timetable? Do you think it should be finalized without delay? Do you think it should be delayed in order to explore particular areas? Or do you think we should finalize some sections but not the others? And finally, do you think that the board should be treating conceptual framework as a living document? With that, we open the floor to discussion.
Yes, in your document you raise quite a number of questions, but one about the timetable of the project. You ask whether to continue with the plan on a timely basis or delay to further develop some areas, which I understand basically is distinction between liabilities and equity, perhaps, or to finalize some section and undertake other work. Now, our view is that you should continue and complete the project on a timely basis and do not delay because of other projects. I mean, I think that the distinction between liabilities and equity is a very important subject, a sensitive one to in many jurisdictions, but it would take a lot of time and effort to come to a conclusion. And therefore, I mean, if you put this into the conceptual framework will never be finished by I don't know how many years. Which the re-deliberation should focus on, there are a number of requests of by stakeholders to reconsider or start considering some aspect. One is prudence, I understand. Our view, the OIC view, is that we are happy with the way the conceptual framework has been dealing with the prudence that is not considered prudent as a major objective. We believe that people who ask for inserting prudence into the conceptual framework sometimes are considering that the concept are not considered a conceptual framework is for the board, is for the board to set in principle, and that they are, believe the prudent, want the prudence in, because they will apply prudence afterwards in their own implementation, which is not the way we see it. I mean, we are not for asymmetric prudence, not at all. Of course, caution in estimates, of course, but this is for the board to in a number of standard already, the board has said that caution in estimates, or sometimes also asymmetric in the rare circumstances, but that's for the board to decide in each individual standards. And the same on substance over form. Yes, substance of the economic phenomena is the driver for the give useful information, but sometimes the legal form also has a substance in it. So I mean, there should be a balance on those two items. And well, for the time being, that's it.
Alexander?
Three quick main points here. The first one, I believe we have discussed that before here, but still I find a general confusion about the status of the conceptual framework. And at least in my jurisdiction, most people still see the conceptual framework as some sort of constitution. And I know that is noted that that conceptual framework is not intended to be that sort of document, but then comes to the discussion of prudence. Why people are asking to put prudence back, because they are looking at the conceptual framework as some sort of overriding document over all other documents. And that, if that's not the case, I believe that it should be clear. And so what's really the why preparers should care so much with the conceptual framework. This is not only intended to the board, it's intended to be applied in specific circumstances. But again, that relationship is a little bit fuzzy for most people. So what's really the function of the conceptual framework? Because it's intended to the board, that's clear. But for users generally, they tend to see it as a major jurisdiction, no matter how much you say that is a document that should be used to interpret other documents. And when you see a conflict, and you go back to conceptual framework. So that function is quite complicated. So I believe that a little bit more clarification on that, it's necessary.
Could I just respond to that one? It's one of the papers that we're going to be bringing to the board for the March meeting explicitly discusses the purpose and status of the conceptual framework and attempts to sort of clarify some of those issues that I think you're outlining there. So I'm hoping we will address that.
Yeah, and if you could please, some practical implication of that definition of conceptual framework. So conceptual should not be used to that and that, because even auditors, they keep using the conceptual framework sometimes to override or at least to interpret standards in a given way. That
well, that's what we wrote in, I think, in our exposure draft, that, yes, perhaps primarily to guide the board in its standard setting. But when we, in a discussion paper, said that was the only function, people were up in arms, because it's the conceptual framework is ours as well. Mm-hmm. And preparers do find that when our standards are not completely clear, they looked at the conceptual framework for guidance. And I don't think there's much wrong with that. But what we certainly have tried to make clear, and perhaps we have to make it clearer, is that this conceptual framework does not override the standards.
Yes.
That's also fortunate. So it's not a constitution, and by the way, we are the Supreme Court.
And the lack of a Supreme Court helps to to make the confusion, because now some of the auditors are like Supreme Court. The other point is, we strongly agree that that must be a strong distinction between act and that in the conceptual framework, but you should not try to address those specific hybrid financial instruments, which is a very specific case. Otherwise, I agree with my colleague here, never going to finish that. And the final point is OCI. I believe most people are very, very keen on having a better definition of OCI, at least someone that helps in certain cases in practice when you have alternatives that go to P&L or go to OCI. So the lack of a conceptual underpinning behind OCI makes direct application sometimes difficult.
Maybe if I could also respond to that. So the proposals on P&L and OCI are for the board only. So this is not something that entities would be applying themselves.
No, I understand that, but I mean, it's something that for most people it's completely obscure.
Yes.
It's an element of financial statement that some people say, well, use that in that situation, use that in that situation, and that in that situation. But so what is that? So it's to not to have a good definition of OCI in the conceptual framework means that a large part of book value of equity in some companies is quite an unexplained element. So I believe it is a problem.
Jen Chow.
Thank you, Hess. Just a couple of comments. One is with regard to the exposure draft proposal, which you know, the board focus on during the deliberations. We believe that following areas we should focus on. One is that the recognition criteria, especially the role of the probability played in the recognition of criteria. And we think that this is very important part that when we recognize assets, a liability, or an accounting element, people always using some kind of certain, you know, probability to make a judgment. So we hope that the conceptual framework could clarify that at which you know probability level the recognition criteria will meet, and also including how to distinguish, you know, the low probability and very low probability and their relationship with the recognition criteria. So this is the first, and the second is that we also think that the derecognition is also very important, but comparing to the exposure draft with the discussion paper, in the discussion paper, actually we spend a lot of paragraphs, you know, content to discussion the derecognition criteria, but if we look at exposure draft, it's quite simple, but in practice, it's very important that. And actually, if we look at different accounting standards, it's also very important what kind of derecognition principle we do need. If we look at revenue standards, look at the lease standards, if we look at financial instruments, actually we are using different, you know, derecognition principle in different accounting standards. So for accountants or for people, if we hope we do want conceptual work to guide the, you know, individual standard setting, I think we need some kind of general, you know, uniform derecognition principle to guide the different accounting standards, and to help actually not only help the people to understand the standards, but also help our board to make decision what kind of derecognition we need. If we look at the lease standards, finally we did not change anything on this side. But it's actually the underlying issue is that we are very difficult to apply what kind of derecognition principle we need. So I think at conceptual framework level, the recognition part we still need to be enhanced. And the third part is measurement. We agree with the two categories, measurement basis, that is the historical cost and the current value. But we also think that the criteria of selecting different measurement bases still need to be clarified further. And I think we will discuss this issue further next step, compare with, you know, based on the IFREC paper. And the finally, of course, the presentation and disclosure is very important. But based on the conceptual framework, the exposure draft, it seems that a lot of issues we have not yet resolved. So we hope that this part, especially with regard to the presentation part, we still need to clarify the definition of the concept of PNL, OCI, and concept comprehensive income, and how to apply the basic, you know, how to apply this kind of, how to apply especially OCI, you know, the concept of OCI in practice. And with regard to the second question, what strategy we should adopt in the measurement part, measurement part and reporting financial performance part. With regard to the measurement part, I agree that the exposure draft, we try to use information, you know, quality characteristics to try to make sure to establish some kind of standard to select the different measurement bases. But from my point of view, I still believe that measurement objective is much more important than that one. I think the measurement objective should override other principles or other criteria when we select the measurement basis. That is whatever we select historical cost or current value or even fair value or, you know, FOPIO value, whether this kind of measurement basis is helpful for people, for users, to forecast or evaluate the amount, the risk, the uncertainty of the future cash flow. That is very, I think, is very, very important. So once the objective is clear, then we come to the next step, that whether we do need a business model or business activities to play a certain role in selecting measurement basis, also, you know, also what kind of relevant factors we should consider. Actually, relevant factor consistent with the objective of the measurement. So I believe that I also believe that in academic, there are a lot of empirical research has been done in this regard. So I also hope that we could do some research, what kind of measurement basis or what kind of measurement based on the information are really useful for the user's decision. And then this kind of academic findings maybe will help for us to identify that what kind of criteria we should use to select different measurement bases. With regard to reporting financial performance, I'm as a non-English speaking country speaker, sometimes I'm quite confused that not clear what's the meaning of the financial performance. Is just limited to the profit or loss or OCI or income statement, or it's also relevant to the financial position statement or even cash flow statement? So I think that at conceptual framework level, we should clearly define what's the meaning of financial performance. That is very important. If it is clearly defined, and then we go to the details of how to define P&L, OCI, and comprehensive income. In my memory, based on the traditional financial account theory, there are two underlying concepts or theory with regard to performance or income. That is current operating income theory, and another one is all-inclusive income theory. So sometimes if we look, sometimes we discuss the financial performance, it seems that some people are based on current operating income concept. Some people are based on all-inclusive income concept. From my personal view, I think that the financial performance should be based on all-inclusive, you know, income concept theory. And in this case, the performance based on this theory, both financial statements, financial position statement, and income statement should share one single objective. Because all-inclusive income statement actually based on the changes in net assets, that is the all-inclusive income. So I don't think financial position statement in this case and income statement, they have different objectives to reflect what kind of performance we should have. If this happened, then we go to the P&L and OCI comprehensive income. This kind of specific concept may be easy for us to identify what kind of comprehensive income we do need and how to define the profits and loss. Because many people sometimes focus on profits and loss based on maybe current operating income or even based on, you know, realization principle, you know, something like that. So I actually, from user side, P&L, it seems that has not yet played a so significant role from users of investors' decisions. So this is my point. And for third one, what kind of views on the timetable for the project? I think it's very difficult to answer because it's very depends on different parts of project, how we will work on, how much resources available, and what kind of method we are going to adopt. So as just mentioned, four specific areas we can resolve in timely. I do hope that we can finalize the conceptual framework on a timely basis. If not, I think we can delay. Yeah, try to work on this kind of those specific areas and then finish, you know, whole conceptual framework project, because the quality of conceptual framework still very important compared to the timetable. And the people has a very high expectation on the conceptual framework because the current existing conceptual framework has been existing, I think, more than 40 years, I think, has no any changes, basically, fundamentally. So, and this is the third. The fourth with regard to the distinguish between liability and equity, I think it's a very difficult one. So I suppose that we just leave this issue for a separate research project rather than as a part of conceptual work. And finally, whether, you know, we should treat the conceptual work framework as a living document. I believe that, I hope that once the conceptual framework finalized, should be stabilized. But if really the other projects highlight some fundamental issues. And this issue actually impacts many individual standards. I think we need to do so, you know, to update the conceptual framework. This is my point.
Yeah. Kimberly?
I guess a lot of the questions that have been asked are quite interrelated in terms of what you focus on and the timing and the what do you do about measurement and P&L. So I guess in FICE, so I guess we'll sort of answer all of them collectively. And I think we probably have a plan A and a plan B in terms of our first preference, and then if that's not where you want to go, then a second preference. I guess in terms of the three areas, which are perhaps is related to the first question, where we think the most significant work is still required, it is around measurement, P&L versus OCI, and also the liability guidance on present obligation. I guess our top three areas. And in terms of how you might progress them, our first preference would actually be to separate them and deal with them with the related research projects, and I'll explain a little bit more in a moment about what I mean by that. But if you were to go down that route, that would allow, I think, progress to be made on the other areas of the conceptual framework that people have talked about here, to progress those on a timely basis, because we think that would make the project more manageable. In terms of the why we've singled out those three areas, we think they are three of the most difficult topics on which there is a range of views, and many have expressed significant concerns around them. And we think separating them out would enable those divergent views and concerns to be considered in the context of those related research projects without delaying the rest of the project. And it would enable that work to be done to date to be used in those research projects. So it's not a matter of saying, well, what about everything we've done? Is that now thrown away? We don't think that's the case at all. In fact, there's obviously been quite a lot of work done in those areas that then could feed into those research projects. And if you look at them individually, if we start with, say, P&L versus OCI, I think many people would agree that's probably a candidate for more work. You know, the board has itself acknowledged in coming up with the proposals the difficulty of coming up with robust concepts, which is obviously what we're looking for in a conceptual framework project, is some robust concepts. There is a project on primary financial statements on the research agenda, and that's described on the ISB website as one of the things you're going to do is look at the work that was done previously and the previous version of that project to see if any of those ideas have further merit. And I think on top of that, what's been done in the conceptual framework project, and certainly echoing Jane Chu's comments there around needing to think about the primary financial statements as a holistic whole and how they all relate to each other would be, I think, part of that process. And that would therefore allow, I think, the possibility of coming up with some more robust concepts that could go into the framework. If you disagree with our view on that particular issue, and you're saying, so you do want to progress something in the conceptual framework on that, our preference then would be to keep it fairly limited and high level, because we are concerned that if you try to do too much now without actually having done that work in that research project, then you will actually constrain yourselves from actually making better informed progress in that space. And obviously we do want to have progress, and we think that therefore it should be focused on quite limited guidance in the framework if you decide you really need to have something. On measurement, although there's no research project on measurement at the moment, it is actually closely related to P&L versus OCI, because when you look at the different views about people thinking about, well, what measurement basis are relevant, how would I measure particular items, people are really thinking about what information does that provide, particularly for the performance statement. So people might support a particular measurement basis because of the information that gives you in the performance statement. So when people talk about, for example, they're not liking current measurements, one of their reasons is it introduces volatility into P&L, or Those price changes don't have predictive value, and therefore we'd like a more stable measure because we think that has more predictive value. So that's predicated on people's views on what's useful in the performance statement, how it should be presented in terms of should we have a split between P&L and OCI, so getting back again to your comments around how the information should be presented, or should we have a more disaggregated approach, a more fully inclusive income approach that then does correlate more with the rest of the financial statements, and that would then give us the opportunity to disaggregate some of those different economic phenomena and present information in a more useful way. So there is, I think, a very close link between people's views on measurement and their views around P&L versus OCI. So that's why we think that if you did do a research project that was worked alongside the research project on primary financial statements, that would inform the conceptual framework as well. Conversely, again, if you disagree with that and you say, actually, we'd like to make some progress in terms of, you know, obviously the conceptual framework has just a laundry list at the moment, and there has at least been some work done to improve that and to get some work done around measurement, our recommendation would be to focus on refining what you've got rather than taking it further. I think there is some work to be done, for example, around the descriptions, such as the description of historical cost. We think that some work could be done around to improve that, the categorisation in terms of how the different measurement categories are portrayed, and the information value, given that there is a range of factors, as has been identified, in terms of selecting your measurement basis, given that we are in a mixed measurement model, and you're having to need to look at, you know, what is the objective of financial reporting, what are the different qualitative characteristics, that range of factors, that will mean that they will need to be considered in particular projects. And so I think an even-handed approach to looking at the pros and cons of the different measurement basis, if that discussion was sitting there in the conceptual framework, along with a very clear discussion about what the measurement basis represent, you know, the economic phenomena they're trying to portray, and things like are they entity specific or market specific, entry versus exit, all those different types of characterisations described and the information value, that would actually give you some tools that would help in standard setting without necessarily closing the door on further thinking that could evolve. In the context of the liability definition and the guidance, clearly there are links to the FICE project, as was already identified by the board in the document, and we do agree with the suggestion that you're proposing that the FICE project needs to look at the distinction between liabilities and equity. But obviously in the work that you've been trying to do, even though you've been trying to focus that on non-financial liabilities, some of the work around when a present obligation arises and practical ability to avoid, etc., has obviously opened that door to people saying, well, if I take that idea, what does that mean when I come to apply it in the FICE project? And clearly, at the end of the day, we want a liability definition that's consistent, whether it's talking about the distinction between liabilities and equity, or it's talking about do I have a present claim at all, given that the liability definition serves both those purposes. It would be concerning if we went down one track for non-financial liabilities, have a concept of what a liability means for non-financial liabilities, and a different concept of what a liability means for financial liabilities. And so that's why our preference is, in the context of liabilities, I think we'd be comfortable if you wanted to update the definition as has been proposed, that aligns it with the asset definition around focusing on rights and obligations. But when you're getting to that additional guidance around when a present obligation exists, in particular no practical ability to avoid, we think that is better left so that it can work in with the FICE project. And we do, of course, have concerns in the non-financial liability space as well about what that would mean. And although the idea there was the second part of that, the have you received the benefit or have you conducted the activities that determine the extent of the obligation, was to try and hold the door on economic compulsion, so it didn't mean, you know, absolutely everything suddenly became a liability. Our concern is that that's not sufficiently robust and could be misinterpreted, and certainly talking to our constituents, thinking about how they would apply that in practice in an updated version of IS 37, The comments were, well, it's hard enough at the moment to stop people putting all sorts of things into liabilities in order to smooth profits, if you like. It would make it even more difficult. So that's another reason why we would prefer that that guidance around present obligation was actually left to the to be thought about later once you've considered that in terms of vice. So I guess those are the main comments we had. I think I've covered in that probably most of the questions around the strategy, the different issues and the timing. I think in terms of the living document, we do support that idea. Obviously that's consistent if you were to go down that track and park issues. At the very least, you're talking about dealing with liabilities and equity in the FICE project and then coming back to the conceptual framework. So that does suggest it does need to be something that can be updated as new ideas emerge around concepts rather than this once in the 30 years. And I think perhaps that's sometimes why everybody's so keen to get their particular ideas in now, is because you feel like, well, if we don't get that idea in now, we'll never have another opportunity for 30 or 40 years, by which time hopefully I'm doing something different. Whereas if it was a living document, people can see, well, there is the opportunity to come back as ideas do emerge. But having said that, I think we would echo concerns that people have said that doesn't mean you tinker with it, or that it's like it becomes a consequential amendment to every standard setting project, because that's clearly not what a conceptual framework is intended to be. It is intended to be something that you develop your concepts and you apply in your conceptual in your standard setting projects. But we recognise that new ideas can emerge, as we've suggested. If you were going down this track with those three areas, we think that then the framework could be updated as a consequence of that.
Roger.
Well, I think the conceptual framework is important for the board because it saves fighting the same battles over and over again for each standard, and also it ensures some degree of consistency between standards. That's not to say, though, that the board can't decide to depart from the conceptual framework, but it is a good basis for moving forward on. Now, I think the new conceptual framework draft is much improved on the previous conceptual framework, but as others have said, I think there's more work to do on certain chapters. It's a matter of, I don't actually mind whether you issue it without those chapters or whether you issue it and say it's a living document, we're going to update it. But to me, I'm not sure you can have a document which doesn't change for 25 or 30 years. I don't see an inconsistency between stability and a living document. You're not going to change it very often once these chapters are done. But if new work, new standards show that you want to tweak it, I don't think you should say we can't do anything for the next 20 years. So to me, you can have a stable document which can still be occasionally updated. And I think it should be updated for the issues that everyone talked about, for performance and OCI, for measurement, for debt equity. But I think you could issue the whole thing with the statement that you were still working on those chapters and people should expect revisions in the next 2 or 3 years. Unusually for me, I wasn't going to mention prudence, but as two others have mentioned it, I'm only going to mention it as an example of that, which is to say that I think at the Advisory Council, someone suggested we needed a new name for this, because this ace symmetry is called prudence, but it's actually nothing to do with the conventional meaning. And by the way, I think at the moment the description about caution in the face of uncertainty is probably more guidance for preparers than for standard setters. I don't actually see what the ISB are going to do with that admonition, although I can see preparers doing that. But clearly, although it's not at the moment in the conceptual framework, there is a process of taking losses before profits in many historical cost situations, and I won't bore you with examples. Similarly, there's in a fair value world, there's a tradition of taking profits and losses equally. But of course, that's not always the case in standards, so we can all think of examples where we don't take losses before profits in a historical cost sense. And similarly, for example, there can be prohibitions on day one gains in a fair value world. And I just think that we need something in the conceptual framework which explains the circumstances when we do that, in both senses. You know, do we always take gains and losses equally in a fair value world, or why would we have a prohibition on day one gains? And similarly, do we always anticipate losses in the historical cost world? For example, if we can see an impairment, but we don't write up? Why would we depart from that? And at the moment, because we don't have those principles anywhere, we end up with inconsistencies between standards. And it tends to be those inconsistencies which attract the criticism. So I'd like to find a new word other than prudence, find some other chapter to deal with these issues, probably recognition, and then just have some guidance to the board on which hopefully can produce some consistency in how we deal with these issues and various standards.
Interesting thought. Although I wonder if we can find consistency. Interesting. Kim.
Thanks. Oh, very good questions and difficult to come up with the answers. I mean, I think in an ideal situation, you know, we'd love to have, you know, conceptual principles for all these things, but, you know, are we ever going to finalise the conceptual framework? So we approach it on the basis of identifying some of the key areas which we think, you know, perhaps need some more work, very similar to what Kimberly outlined, the definition of a liability, the whole present obligation, the issue around whether or not as a concept it is robust and going to, you know, meet its objective of really capturing what is a liability versus what only might be a liability in the future. And the other areas would be on measurement as well as performance reporting, and also picking up on Jing Xiao's point around derecognition. Now, I think perhaps on the liability definition and the derecognition, those would really be quite fundamental concepts which I think should be addressed in the conceptual framework. The other areas, as I say, in an ideal world, would be great if they were addressed in the conceptual framework more comprehensively, but I think from a timing perspective, that might not be practical. So, you know, tying in or leading into your question around the strategy for measurement as well as performance reporting and then the timetable, you know, I think a possible approach would be not to delay finalising the conceptual framework. So perhaps on some of these areas, having some high-level concepts in the conceptual framework and then dealing with them as separate research projects. And I also agree, I think measurement ties been very closely with performance reporting. But rather than holding up the conceptual framework for those things, as they're dealing with them as separate projects. Similarly, on the distinction between liabilities and equity, again, would be great if there was more guidance in the conceptual framework, but I think as long as the high-level principles of debt and equity are there, dealing with the complexities of, you know, instruments that have characteristics of both could be dealt with in a separate project. So I would therefore go with finalising conceptual framework on a timely basis, but also, you know, identifying those areas which still need to be addressed, but do that, you know, separately. And then on the living document, you know, I certainly agree. I don't think that it should perhaps be something which is then closed for the next, you know, 20 or 30 years. Maybe an idea could be initially seen as though it's going to be new, doing a bit of a post-implementation review type of a concept, maybe 3 years after it's issued, looking at standards that have been issued since the conceptual framework was issued and addressing, well, how well did the conceptual framework actually serve the setting of those standards and whether or not, you know, again, it's meeting those objectives. Or do some things, you know, really still need to be addressed?
Yukio.
Thank you. With regard to the area that the board should focus on during the deliberation, we believe that the ISD should give a careful consideration to the following four areas. The first item is the roles of the conceptual framework. We believe that the ISD should discuss what role the conceptual framework should play before considering individual topics. We think the role of the conceptual framework should be to assist the ISB to develop the individual standard. The second item is the profit or loss and the OCI. We think profit or loss should be defined as an element in the right of accomplishing the objective of the financial statement, and OCI should be recycled without exception. The third item is measurement. We believe that selecting the appropriate measurement basis is important for the both the purpose of reporting an entity's financial performance and financial position. We think the ISB should clarify the distinction between the two purposes. The fourth item is recognition. We think the ISB should focus on whether, and if so, how to clarify the probability threshold. We also think that even if the ISB were to finalize the review of the conceptual framework in accordance with the current timetable, the ISB should continue to discuss liability and equity, the unit of account, and the recognition, considering the importance of these two projects. Regarding to measurement, considering the most respondent agreed with the mixed measurement model, we do not think it's necessary for the ISB to conduct research work that focuses on whether a single measurement basis is more appropriate. And with regard to discussions about reporting financial performance, we understand respondents to the exposure draft disagreed with all or some part of the proposal in the exposure draft. Considering that the conceptual framework project was restarted primarily to develop robust concept about profit or loss and OCI based on the comment received on the agenda consultation 2011, the project will not be considered successful unless such robust concept can be developed. So we understand the respondent to the exposure draft disagreed with all or some part of the proposal, and therefore, we think the ISB should take time necessary to improve its proposal rather than rushing to finalize the project. With regard to the timetable for the project, generally speaking, we do not think the ISB should finalize the conceptual framework for area where it is likely that fundamental changes will be made in the near future. In addition, as stated earlier, we believe the concept of profit or loss and OCI, the area that a number of constituents believe critically important in their responses to the agenda consultation 2011. Therefore, we encourage the ISB to continue to work on developing robust concepts that can be supported by many constituents. Regarding to the distinction between liability and equity, taking into the account the ISB's deliberation regarding a research project on the distinction between liability and equity, we now worry about the risks of revisiting and amending the conceptual framework a short period of time. So considering a conceptual framework will be used as a reference point in the development of the standard, we believe the ISB should avoid the possibility of changing important concepts in the conceptual framework over and over, so as to provide a stable platform in the standard setting activities. So we think it's important to provide a stable platform for standard setting activities, and concern that the research project on the distinction between liability and equity may lead to revisiting and amending the conceptual framework within a short time period. So with regard to living document, we do not agree that the ISB should treat the conceptual framework as a living document. Considering the conceptual framework will be used as a reference point when the ISB develops the standard, we believe the conceptual framework should provide a stable platform about important concepts, and the conceptual framework should not be amended repeatedly. If the ISB's intent is not to change the conceptual framework frequently, we suggest the ISB avoid the using the term of living document, because some argue that it seems to imply the conceptual framework should be updated in accordance with interval similar to that of the standards.
Yukio, would you be able to accept the consequences of a robust definition of OCI? For example, there is the sale of a steel plant here in the UK is highly complicated by the fact that they have a pension plan with a huge hole in it, and that huge hole never went through P&L, and perhaps it would have been tackled much earlier if it had gone through P&L.
Yeah, I think, you know, the you should define, you know, the profit or loss and OCI. Otherwise, you know, only, you know, to define the OCI is not easy. It's you know, related, you know.
No, but apparently, until now, we find the what's happening in a pension fund not so relevant for the performance of a company. That's why we put it in OCI. Nevertheless, it can bring a company into huge trouble, and it can make the existence, the continued existence of a company in another form, shape or form, into a huge problem. There are 1,000 companies in the UK that have pension plans that either are not going to be paid as they are, or that will lead to a bankruptcy of the company, according to a recent study. So, you know, putting something outside profit or loss has big consequences. But I wonder if the world that tells us to have robust concepts of OCI, if they are ready to accept the consequences of that.
Yeah, our, you know, the thinking is that, you know, the OCI is a linkage factor of the, you know, the profit or loss and and you know, the equity. So I think, you know, the ISB could, you know, define the profit or loss and the OCI, and also that the recycling of OCI without exception.
Patrick and Anton.
Thank you. Well, first of all, I think we are perfectly conscious of the status of the conceptual framework. Even if this is not really easy for certain legal cultures, where, you know, you have a constitution and then you derive, and we feel also that in a principles-based environment, it's difficult to have the principles or the overarching principles of a lesser value, quote unquote, than the standards themselves. However, we understand. So, but that's something that you have to bear in mind. There is a difference in culture. Therefore, we feel that the document is extremely important, even if it's non-binding for the standard setters. And as a consequence, we feel that stability is important. You can't change a conceptual framework every year. So as a consequence, we need to avoid two temptations. Temptation one would be to rush the matter and consider that the conceptual framework is a living document. Of course, the term living has to be defined.
If it's a daily life, then the answer is no. If it's 30 years, then we will all be, we say in French, eating the grass from the roots.
It just means not dead.
Okay. So it depends. It's not a generational issue, so not one every generation, that's something reasonable in between. And the other extreme would be, of course, to work on this forever and not to produce it. I think it would be a big mistake. So at the end of the day, I think ISB would be well advised to finalize in a reasonable time frame, a reasonable framework on a reasonable day. And to do so, distinguishing between what I would call clarifications and wording issues that have come up from the consultation, points requiring more work in order to establish a clear playing field, and where that can be achieved before the conceptual framework is released. And I will mention the areas where I think I will be very much in agreement with my colleagues. And points requiring substantial work and due consideration in a separate project, probably. So if I had to classify, I would say that what is achievable, I hope, and maybe it has to be robust, though I take your point on certain points, maybe we will be happy when we see the outcome rather than saying it in advance. But certainly we need to work on measurement, because the mixed model needs to have a clear definition of the border and how you cross the border, if you want to, or when you have to. So for us, and the link with maybe the business models or the business activities, depending how you want to, the terminology you want to use, this is important. So the mixed model is well accepted. However, it's not defined. I mean, the territories are not defined properly in our view. Also, the reporting of performance, and I think we need to have further discussions or elaborations around the concept of performance, P&L, and OCI. And so these are the two key points. We can mention, of course, I fully accept the idea of elaborating a little more around prudence, because if asymmetric prudence is used, which happens to be the case in the number of standards, I am told, then we should say when and how and why. You know, in a conceptual framework, you need, if you don't want to be blunt by saying you don't take gains until they are realized and you take losses as soon as they are probable, then you have to be more sophisticated on how you define when, in a specific standard, you will use prudence or the word that Roger will propose soon, I'm sure. I also think that probability and constructive obligations have to be defined a little better. Now, the point that is requiring, in my view, substantial work and due consideration is certainly debt and equity. But why not say that this specific chapter will not be finalized in that first, if we were batching points, this one could be a separate point, I think. Not too far, but not practicable short term, in my view. Now, a final recommendation or suggestion: if we want to avoid difficulties in the future or minimize them, we should be well advised to have a specific analysis of the future conceptual framework and what is being made in the US, and also the criteria for endorsement in the EU, because we have spotted a number of possible problems or lacks of convergence, and if that was prospering in the future, that would be, instead of converging, we might be diverging. So we have to be extremely careful. In the accounting directive and IS regulation in Europe, I think we have some points which are not fully compatible with what is being said at the moment in the conceptual framework. So we have to be careful, because we have either to accommodate some or open to to some sort of middle ground, or we will have to discuss at European level further, I think. Thank you.
Tom?
No.
I made the mistake once.
I think it's really tempting to say, let's wrap this up and get it done. And that the conceptual framework's a living document, and we'll get back to it. Not daily, not every year, but in due course, 5 to 10 years cycles. I think we ought to reflect on what happened at the FASB when we first developed the conceptual framework. The recognition and measurement chapter proved to be very difficult to advance. So we sort of just wrapped it up in 85 without making conclusions. We've not looked at it again. And so we're sitting here with no guidance in some of the most important areas conceptually in accounting. Frank?
But if I may interject, in the meantime, we've made a lot of progress. Despite this
perhaps conceptual
guidance, not
perhaps. In standard setting, the urgent almost always overtakes the importance, and we don't necessarily advance. So while we did some things, the two boards had a memorandum of understanding about trying to advance some of the most challenging accounting issues and spend over a decade trying to do it. And I will assert, this is my view, we didn't complete and advance at least half the areas. And I believe the reason why we didn't is we didn't have foundational conceptual issues to deal with things like financial statement presentation, derecognition of assets, intangible assets, netting of derivatives, liabilities and equity. All of those were on that list, and we didn't advance things very far. I think liabilities and equity is a mess. I think we all do. But I don't believe any of us can advance it without resolving measurement and presentation. And so I get greatly concerned if what happens is those are both really challenging areas, let's just stop. Okay. Because I think we need some foundation to move forward. So my recommendation or preference would be perhaps to consider completing all parts of the framework except measurement and presentation. And when I say presentation, I don't concentrate just on profit or loss at OCI, because I don't know that we'll ever justify the potpourri or mess of items we put in OCI, but there may be other presentation alternatives that we have that could very much limit what we ever think goes into OCI and recycle. And I think we'd explore it. I'm also selfishly making that recommendation because the FASB is making a concerted effort to try to advance presentation and measurement right now. And we could use a compatriot to learn together to try to bring those concepts forward as far as possible and allow convergence in those areas to continue. Because if we do it separately or whatever and we diverge in those areas, that's going to be really challenging. I also believe that many of the challenging issues that are put forward by your stakeholders in terms of the objectives and qualitative characteristics, like prudence or stewardship or business model, really are about how are you going to decide measurement, recognition, and presentation issues. And you could take pressure off of those particular decisions if what you did was advance or at least move forward measurement and presentation. Right now, presentation has almost always been a war between current values and historical cost. But that's only a really small part of the problem. I mean, within historical cost, there's tons of choices. What's cost to capitalize? When do we impair? What to amount? To what amounts? What discount rates? All of those things could be highly helpful in advancing standard setting going forward. And from an outsider's view, when I look at, I think it's impossible, near impossible, for us to balance the stakeholders in the United States. But you've got over 110 countries you're trying to be responsive to. I think advancing the conceptual framework and getting agreement by working with them on some of these more challenging issues will actually allow you the opportunity to advance standards and have them accepted more rather than stopping and having those fights be one-off in every project and not dealt with consistently.
Andreas has been patient for a long time.
You rarely see that, right? So let me start off. I'm a great fan of a living document because, as you suggested, it would be a pity if the document was dead on arrival. Yeah. I think there is no other way of updating the conceptual framework because I don't think it is feasible to keep waiting until each and every issue is being resolved. As my fellow colleagues have said, I think the biggies, measurement, OCI versus P&L, liabilities versus equity, desire for the thing, deserve further thinking. They probably don't desire it, but so therefore, I think I would be happy with publishing the statement before the, these chapters got finalized. Despite acknowledging that the current draft is a significant improvement over what we currently have, I think there's more work to do on a number of chapters where I believe that there is a lot of discussion in the chapters, but there's almost no tool to guide the board's decisions. So there are discussions, but there is no framework as to say, when do I pick alternative A, B, or C? And that goes for virtually all of the big things, like when do I choose cost, when do I choose fair value? What's the sequence of arguments that I have to run through? What are the relative weighting that I have to apply? And I think a conceptual framework should not be judged as being complete when it's had reached 80 or 100 pages, but really when you believe as a board collectively, it now has value for me in guiding me, say, through the next 5 to 10 years. And that should be the ultimate point, I think. Not so much whether you can complete it in 1, 2, 3, or 4 years. It's ready when you believe it is ready. I would like to pick up one of the issues that Alexandra has started on, being the status. And I think there is something that you need to consider. Yes, you have said that the status of the conceptual framework is, it is a guidance document mainly for the board, maybe also for others, and it doesn't trump standards. However, I think if you look at the status from the perspective that there is a huge risk that you have a disconnect between the current body of literature and the concepts, then the question is, what does that tell me about the status? So if you now think about putting back prudence or whoever will find a better name for it, stewardship and some other concepts into chapters 1, 2, and potentially 8 even on capital maintenance, you're changing something there. You're not making any change to the 3,800 pages. So what does that tell me then? Why are you making that change? Is it only prospectively if you come across that issue again or if you're filling a gap? I think if you're changing fundamentals, it would suggest to me that there should be a knock-on effect on the body of literature. And if you don't want to do that, I think you need a very good justification as to why. Because otherwise, there will always be some that say, I know that's your current way of thinking, but how does that resonate with the huge body of literature that is applicable to me? I think that is the point that probably comes back to Jen Chow's point in educating people, what are the primary concepts? And it doesn't help me if I say, the principles and the concepts are clear, but unfortunately I don't find them in the specific literature. Which is why I think you really have to think again about that status issue. So it's not so much what I do believe is the status of the conceptual framework, but how do I go about between the differences that the and revised and updated conceptual framework will have with the body of current literature. It's probably not so much with the changes that you are currently proposing, but once you bring back these things like stewardship and prudence and proper business model, then the question is, what's the impact of these to existing standards? And if you say none, I think you're just creating a bit of havoc in the outside world.
Gian.
Okay, let me give you some general views of AOSSC working group members, just for your information. We received the views from 6 members, including Japan, China, and Australia. Regarding question one, there are mixed views regarding this issue among the members. Many working members stated that the ISV should focus on reporting financial performance and measurement because they believe those issues are fundamental. In addition, some members considered that the other areas, such as whether to retain the probability criterion as a part of the chapter on recognition, and definition of a liability and a unit of account are equally important. One working group member expressed the view that the ISV should focus on the issues other than reporting financial performance and measurement, which are required to be conducted as a separate project, so as not to delay other areas in conceptual framework project. Regarding the timetable, there are also the working members have mixed views on the timetable. Two members supported the alternative one. The conceptual framework should be finalized in accordance with the currently anticipated timetable. And two working members supported the alternative three and suggested that the section of measurement and reporting financial performance be deferred. And two members cautioned that the ISV should not risk changing the conceptual framework over and over within a short period of time.
Rebecca.
Thank you, Hans. I guess I wanted just to step back for a moment just because I would not wanted to, I guess, remind us that it was really refreshing to hear that from all of this outreach, just the high priority the conceptual framework has across our stakeholder groups, including preparers. So that was very good to hear. From as a standard setter, but as well wanted to congratulate the board and staff on the strong response you did receive from users. I think you hit a record number of written responses of 19 from users, and that's kind of very important to consider. So when I was reflecting on the different comments that you did hear, often on many of them, it seemed to be you were hearing split views. There was agreement or there wasn't. So as I guess one of the factors that we consider when we face those scenarios is going back to those users' views as a way to try to say what's the way forward. And in particular, in redeliberations, I hate to say, but one of the areas we would like you to think a little further on is prudence. Maybe refreshing to hear Roger's idea of considering maybe a new term, because clearly there are different understandings of what that term means, such that I think we will continue to debate that, the use of prudence and standards going forward. But from a user perspective, there did seem to be support for reintroducing that. So from that perspective, and a piece of advice that we received from the council that oversees our board's performance equivalent to your trustees is often in these scenarios when you're weighing views and you can't get agreement, equalized unhappiness is often a good comment to consider to advance it. But would that say, importantly though, what this does is bring to the discussion the need to consider, shall we say, stewardship, and whether we're trying to maintain egregious practices, which are really what the user views were really articulating, that including that notion, I think, is important, so it is something the board considers in setting standards going forward. But I did have a similar thought as Kim had raised earlier as to considering post-implementation review and what would that be from a framework perspective, and this might be one of the areas that we would be helpful to revisit just to see how it has helped in discussions. But overall, when it comes to what would be our advice for next steps, I think similar to our colleagues here, given the past discussion paper exposure draft that was held, there are chapters that are more developed. And we would be supportive of seeing chapters, in essence, 1 to 5 up to derecognition as what would be to advance and to finalize. We would very much encourage and ask the board at this stage, if that is their approach, to commit to then doing research projects of a conceptual nature on measurement and as part of that FICE project to further the thinking on the distinguishing liabilities and equity. we would include, though, the consideration of other comprehensive income within the measurement guidance. Because to be truthful, OCI is a concept that we use to try to, shall we say, manage through areas where we want to advance improving usefulness of financial information by having a different measurement, but that might not be, shall we say, supported within from a performance perspective. So it's more of a practical tool. So we're, shall we say, hesitant as to actually trying to achieve what would be a conceptual description or concept for other comprehensive income, that we'd be better to focus on what's useful information, how should that be presented, and that's integral to considering measurement. From, as well as Andreas noted, in talking about measurement, we have diverse views, so we think further discussion is warranted just to reemphasize why that needs to be a separate project. But the outcome should be trying to develop that framework or guidance that is more directive for the board to consider as to what's necessary when we're selecting a measurement, what would then help to make it be sufficient or enhance that usefulness of information, that we see more common decisions being made as to how items are measured across standards. And I think that would really help to evolve the thinking and moving forward, I'll say the conceptual underpinning across the standards going forward. There was one area within the measurement guidance that we did want to draw out a little bit more specifically, and that was relating to using a current value when you're doing transactions between holders of equity claims. In those scenarios, you are dealing with, you have pre-existing relationships, and if you remember back to last March, we had shared guidance that we have within our national GAAP relating to how do you measure transactions between related parties. This was a new concept, and I'm not sure it was quite highlighted enough by stakeholders. So from that perspective, I just want to emphasize that in moving forward, that that piece should be part of that new project. But overall, what we, kind of similar to Kimberly, had a tiered approach in our thinking. The current guidance within the measurement is a step forward than the existing, as long as the board sticks to kind of the what was commonly agreed upon as helpful. So if I look going forward, spending board and staff time to try to further develop that current measurement guidance would not be what we'd recommend. We'd rather see those efforts as part of advancing in a major project or research project on measurement. When it comes to the living document, that was a term we had introduced when we were trying to talk with our stakeholders on this exposure draft. And we got a very different reaction. Some of the views have been shared here, but it sounds like we'll be tweaking it continuously. So what we found was describing it as it remains fit for purpose, which was really what Andreas was saying, is it a helpful tool for the board, given other, should we say, developments, not just within, as you're doing your standards work, but as other national standard setters and the GAAP we do, we also have, should we say, we'll do thought leadership, how we advance in the conceptual framework, and including linking in with our US colleagues. We think it is important that we do consider it from that perspective as another reason why we may need to reopen it in addition to the targeted research projects that we hope the board will undertake on measurement and liabilities and equity.
Thank you. Mary.
Rebecca just used the phrase tiered approach in terms of moving forward, which I'll use as the label for finalizing the pieces that people think subject to a bit more work or ready to go final, and then doing further work on other areas. What wasn't clear to me across the range of people who were supporting that, and that was many but not most, is what, if anything, you'd want or expect to see in the finalization? Is it be absolutely silent and have nothing? Have a placeholder that's something very high level, or have thinking to date but note that it is, you know, the plan is to develop it? And those are, I think, three very different ways that you could approach the tiered approach. So I would be interested in hearing, you know, a bit, without going back on everything, you know, what you were thinking for that. Now, that's if you support the finalize something rather than hold finalization for, you know, further advancement on all fronts.
Very good. One question to Mr. Ono, a few questions to Jin Chao.
although in the ED we propose OCI will be rare, but on the other hand, we say, you know, sometimes can be recycled or not. But you clearly said every OCI should be recycled. Even though you're not happy about our work about clear definition of OCI profit loss, can I ask you a very simple question? In your mind, OCI is relatively broad terms or narrow terms. The reason why I ask this way is because we can define as a narrow terms and say that every OCI should be recycled. Or alternatively, we define relatively broadly and say some of them can be recycled or some of them may not. My question to you is, broadly speaking, your mind, OCI is a broader term or narrow term?
Yeah, I think it's what the OCI you consist of, and it depends on the, you know, how you can define the profit or loss. And OCI is the, you know, the if you know you can define the profit or loss, then you know you can easily define OCI. And it depends on the, you know, scope. It depends on the, you know, that situation.
But you know, before we define clearly, how can you conclude all OCI should be
all OCI should be recycled?
Yeah. Okay, I have a question to Jin Chao.
Okay.
Jin Chao, you say you prefer the all-inclusive approach. I have a few questions to you. As I understand, the people have different views about all-inclusive approach. Some say the standard should not have subtotals, just require recognition and measurement, and list all the results into profit loss or companies have an income statement. Others prefer have a relatively clear, you know, definition or subtotals. My question to you is, in your mind, should standards have a clear, you know, definition about subtotals? First, should standards have subtotals, define subtotals? And secondly, should standards clearly defined and or not, or whether standards are able to do so?
My point is that if we take all-inclusive income income concept, actually subtotals is not so important, because actually, you know, all the changes in net assets are included in income, maybe a comprehensive income. So some items in the P&L or some items OCI, I think for users does not make so sense, you know. Yeah, just like we are making decision, some items should be included OCI, some actually just based on standard by standard, some on the P&L, or some changes in fair value in the P&L, some changes in fair value in OCI. Do it's meaningful? Yeah, actually, we do have very good sound underlying concept or theory to justify why some changes in fair value in P&L, some in OCI. So if we take all-inclusive income concept, I think that doesn't matter.
So you plead for just abolishing OCI and put everything in P&L?
I'm not saying abolishing OCI.
That's the consequence of what you're saying now.
Otherwise, I think it's very difficult to clearly define P&L and OCI. And what kind of subtotal should be included, you know, P&L and OCI, and what kind of item should be recycled or not. Actually, in short term, it's difficult to work out, in my mind. So, yeah.
Okay, I understand.
Yeah.
Okay, this is a second round we're going to do now. Andreas?
It's in reply to a question that Mary asked to the tiered approach. So your question was where there is no current, where's currently a gap in the conceptual framework, and where your proposals haven't advanced as much what we would recommend in terms of finalization. I would rather go for a blank. If the alternative was to write down an interim solution or interim thinking document, because that would really hold
or capture the thinking to date.
Well, if it, and that would be the only exception that I would apply to that general principle, because I'm not sure whether you are advanced enough to capture today's thinking. If you were, then my preference would be then put it into the conceptual framework and finalize it. But if you don't really know where you will be ending up, I think just continue working on it and leave it blank for the moment. That would be my preference, rather than spending endless resources on devising an interim solution. So it really depends on how far in the thought process you think you are. If you are 80-90%, then I think go for the 100. Well, make it complete.
For example, the measurement chapter that's presently there, would you make that a blank?
That would be, according to Patrick's terminology, that would, for me, would be in his camp too. That is, I would work further on it, because currently there is no decision tool. It's a discussion. But it doesn't have any rigor as to what the board should be doing when it's faced with a measurement decision to be made.
I take Rebecca's point. We should have another project on measurement. So even if we took that existing chapter a bit further, you would probably still leave it blank.
Then probably yes.
I don't think that's very helpful.
Well, I mean, this is not helpful either, what you currently have. I mean, let's face it.
Rebecca.
Well, we had that exact discussion. Is it better off to leave what was in the existing framework blank, or what the current proposals were going? And we felt that the existing was dangerous because present value is not a measurement method, it's obvious. But as to blank, we were concerned that are we going to be advancing at all? And what we felt was the discussion of the measurement bases were helpful. So at least we're starting to all talk from a similar terminology. So from that perspective, where there is, the advice would be is there's common agreement with the current measurement comments, just to finalize those or better articulate, but not to expand. I don't think it is easy just to expand certain notions as has been suggested in that certain areas, but you're better to take those ideas and say that should be issues addressed in that second project.
I think we can do a little bit more than what we've done. And the next paper we go to discuss, I hope, has some elements that are useful. I don't agree with all elements of the paper, but I do think we can get a little bit further ahead in providing guidance around measurements without the need of a full-fledged new project. Kimberly?
Well, I think, as I said at the start, I think our preference would be the blank approach in those areas, and that's because of the linkages. You know, even talking about measurement, I think if you were to limit the measurement chapter to describing what the measurement bases are, and what their characteristics are, in an even-handed way around the information value, then that could be done. That doesn't close the door on further thinking, because that's where our concern really is. The more that you try to do now to put things in order to say, well, at least we've done something, the concern is, does that then close the door on the development of that further thinking? So
be strange. So in the past decade, we have introduced a lot of standards in which we advanced thinking about current measurements. And okay, that has had some side effects in terms of OCI, which were not all that pretty, perhaps. But we've made a lot of progress in a couple of standards. The insurance standard is going to be a very good example of that. Wouldn't it be strange if we are not able to say anything in the conceptual framework about the circumstances in which probably cost is the best answer, and in which circumstances current measurement is probably the best answer? I don't think it's rocket science, and again, I think the next paper and also our discussion paper had a little bit more guidance to that effect, and I think we can make some progress.
Our concern is that we feel that there is, to do that robustly, that there is more thinking to be done around that, and that some of the thinking is a starting point rather than an end point. And that even the views that are expressed in there are really just feel like they're just preliminary thinking, and that's a concern, that once you put them in the framework, does that then drive people down a particular line? You know, just to give you one example around historical cost, for example, some people like to say, well, I'd like to have that in the performance statement because it gives me margin information in terms of how much margin I've created. I've put all my inputs, that's how much I've paid for them, I've sold them, this is how much I've made by creating, you know, manufacturing something. And that works as long as there's been no price changes between when you started your transformation process and when you ended it. But if there are price changes, if you think of like a gold manufacturer, for example, with movements in the price of gold are clearly going to impact on how much money they make. And so if they just report their margin based on, well, I paid this much for gold, I, you know, spent this much on labour and transferred it into jewellery and sold it, but in the meantime the price of gold moved, then you're not actually getting a picture of what's driving the cash flows that they're generating, because it's two different things that are driving it, their value transformation and also price changes. And so that's why we think some more holistic thinking around, particularly on performance statement, if you were actually able to divide that up and actually show the transformation activity versus their, say, their purchasing decisions, you would get more information about what's the value drivers for that business. And that's why we're concerned about, if you start going down this route of putting in an idea around, this is how I might measure particular assets, we've actually started a process which has taking us down a path which may not be where we want to go once we've actually given some more thought around performance reporting.
Have to wait for the day that the whole world is ready for current costs.
Not necessarily. And that, I think, in the performance reporting project, if people can actually start that, and if we did actually have in that chapter the talk about current cost, instead of at the moment it's sort of stuck in there as part of historical costs, talk about what it actually represents, as distinct from capital maintenance ideas, as distinct from inflation accounting, because when you use those two words, people automatically go to thinking about inflation accounting or capital maintenance. Think about it as distinct from that, the information value. And even if that was there in the framework, that would give us some tools to start thinking about how we might do things. But it's kind of like how far you take that. And the further you take it, the further you are actually setting yourself down a path which would be actually close the door on the evolution, I think.
Tom?
I know it's hard to think about having done some thought and leaving a chapter blank. You know, that doesn't feel completely satisfactory. I think there's two things to consider about whether that's the right decision or not. First, while I think you've done in advance some thinking on historical cost versus current value measures, I don't know that it's completely balanced. And that is a reason why I would hesitate necessarily putting it in. What I mean by completely balanced is the discussion is what only about when current values can provide decision useful information. And so it's sort of a challenge. Historical cost is okay, always, but we have to really challenge current values in these aspects to justify going to current value. That's how I read some of the explanations. There isn't an evaluation in any framework as to why historical cost, in what aspects, it meets the objective of financial reporting and the qualitative characteristics. And so I feel a little bit, if you were to move that forward to sort of say what are we trying to achieve when we pick historical cost in meeting the objectives and the qualitative characteristics and how that contrasts to what we can achieve with current value measures, perhaps I might feel more comfortable as having a temporary holder. But if it doesn't go farther than that, I get worried that there's a apparent bias or hurdle that you have to do to justify one versus another. But secondly, I think if you were to go forward and try to commit to do this more robustly, it's going to be hard. And if there's some placeholder there, it makes it far easier to just say, we give up, rather than saying, we really need to keep on working at it. And that's another reason I would at least consider as a possibility blank. The third reason I was already said. I don't know that this is developed far enough to really be a really good tool for the board to make decisions. It's just sort of discussion. I'll tell you, our concept statement 5, we never talk about it, ever, when we talk about measurement, even though it's there. It might feel good that we have a measurement chapter, but it doesn't help us at all.
Yeah, well, I don't have the impression that in the work we have done thus far that we sort of take historic cost as the basis and then you have to challenge that to get to something else. And that's not how we work in practice either. Everybody is fully aware that for insurance accounting, historic cost is completely irrelevant.
In fact, I was asking myself if it was not the contrary.
Well, that's what some people say, but but I don't think you can read that.
It was interesting reading the comment letter analysis, actually, that some people out there said, it's clear you have a bias towards historic costs. Other people out there said, it's clear you have a bias towards fair value. which I took comfort from, because we were trying to aim for being neutral, so perhaps...
He may be slightly unhappy.
Yeah.
And I may just be reflecting, Hans, I may be reflecting my own bias when I read it. Mm. I think we all do. I just have never seen written in a conceptual framework how historical cost helps with understanding the amount, timing, and uncertainty of future cash flows in a robust sort of way. We can talk about a little bit about how it might be related to stewardship. But that's not always clear to me, because if management has a choice as to hold or sell, and they don't have any impediments to selling, you would think you'd want current value to know whether their holding decision made sense or not. But yet it's sort of viewed that historical cost is better on stewardship. So.
Do we have the whole afternoon to have the discussion?
I think we can move to the second paper.
I'll present that. I've drawn the short straw, but I'll be very brief. In fact, it's a very brief paper, and given the time, I won't spend very long in it. I didn't have my second round say in this, but to me, a blank chapter on measurement is not the solution. And I do feel that even though there's going to be possibly a longer-term project on this, that it's important that the chapter has as much guidance as possible on where to go on measurement. Clearly, overwhelmingly, constituents favour a mixed measurement model. And so the question is, how do we decide which choices to make in individual standards? So I won't go through the whole paper. I'll just really focus on two issues. One is, I think, the importance of reporting financial performance. I think the current conceptual framework draft has made a major step in elevating financial performance to an equal priority with financial position. But when you're actually deciding on a measurement basis, I think perhaps we should first be thinking about financial performance, which is probably most important to users. And then if we decide that perhaps we should be using a different basis for financial position, that's fine. And indeed, I think the conceptual framework has progressed to those sort of ideas. So I think the first issue is financial, is what's best from a financial performance perspective. I think second, again, the conceptual framework's moved on business model. At one stage, business model was rather decried as being management intent. I think people have now decided business model does have relevance. I think, again, the business model should be taken into account in deciding on how to measure. We provide suggestions in here about how one might do that. And I think those sort of things are capable of actually fitting into the current chapter, even though it's accepted that perhaps longer term, more work will produce slightly different answer. So with those introductory comments, I'm happy to hand it over to the ASA.
Thank you. Overall, we support the IFRAG's proposal, especially we found the proposal in the paragraph 18 and 22 in the paper very helpful in improving the ISB's decision when developing standards. Nevertheless, there are two areas that we do not agree with. The first one is the proposal in the paragraph 19b. We believe this is inconsistent with the recommendation in the paragraph 18 that the selection of the measurement basis should be considered from the perspective of reporting financial performance. This is also inconsistent with our view that selection of a measurement basis for the purpose of reporting an entity's financial performance is crucial. Although different measurement bases for the same asset liability will not be used very often, we disagree with the proposal because we believe the ISB should not compromise in selecting an appropriate measurement basis for the financial performance for the sake of reporting the financial position. Second one is paragraph 23. We believe the characteristics of an instrument that are taken into account when considering how an asset or liability would contribute to the future cash flows to an entity.
Kimberly.
With our view is that certainly there's some, you know, some interesting ideas here, and if there was a research project around measurement and reporting financial performance, that this will be useful input to it. In terms of the recommendation to use this to expand what's in the conceptual framework, we disagree with that. And I think a lot of the reasons why we disagree is consistent with, you know, the comments I was making before in terms of the link between measurement and reporting financial performance. In fact, the things that you highlighted around why you want this in measurement is because of views around financial performance. So that really demonstrates that the two ideas are linked, and yet we've, in some of the discussion we've said here, we don't actually know what financial performance is. We haven't sort of figured out what P&L represents or what OCI represents and what should be in the two. And yet, for example, dual measurement as in 19A, the support for the idea of using different measurement bases in the statement of financial performance and position is actually predicated on the view that there does need to be this P&L versus OCI, and that OCI is the appropriate place to put leftover debits and credits from the measurement process, because that's kind of what it is. So I think that's why we would not support that, because we think that further work does need to be done around performance and what that means and what OCI means. And also we don't support the taking the business model approach further. We think where the framework proposals are at the moment, it's right to think about the business activities and the business model, but we think that that's the limit and it's not appropriate to take that further. So we think in both cases the ideas here are really premature, and they are actually extending it beyond what was proposed, and we think that if that were to go down that track, you'd even need to consider potentially another exposure draft around that, because it would be expanding some of those ideas beyond what was proposed, and clearly there are many of us that don't necessarily agree with that position.
I know there's at least one paragraph that the FRC itself would vehemently disagree with, which is 22B, which basically says it would be okay to only recognize capital gains at the very end of holding an asset and upon sale of an asset. And I remember a reaction on the conceptual framework from the FRC where I said, well, that's what we should never do because it doesn't say anything about the performance of a company when you sell a an asset after 30 years and you recognize all the income in the last year, it doesn't say anything about the performance of the company in that year. And I fully agree with that. So I think that one element that has been missing a little bit in our analysis is actually that the longer term a cash conversion cycle has, that the less relevant historic cost becomes and the more relevant current measurement becomes, which is something very different from what many long-term investors tell us, who would like this approach where they can recognize income when they want and get a more stable earnings profile. So this is, I think, a very problematical paragraph. Tom?
I think I agree a little bit with both Hans and what Kimberly had said. I like the fact that you're saying let's move the conversation further. And I think that's what needs to be done, either with an interim conclusion or a longer term outcome. I am uncomfortable with ever stating that we ought to be thinking about the balance sheet separate from the income statement. And so I'm not really comfortable with the sort of the notion that we might find it good to do current values in the balance sheet but not in the income statement, because I've come to the conclusion that measurement's all about subsequent measurement, not initial measurement, and the subsequent measurement tells you what will be an income. And if we don't, if we're not interested in an income, why are we putting it in the balance sheet? Because at initial measurement, the difference between historical cost and current value is minimal. It's often only different costs being capitalized. And so what's on the balance sheet at the initial part, I don't think is as big a deal as what's in the back end. So I get uncomfortable with any view that we should persist thinking that it'd be good to do in the balance sheet but not the income statement. I flip it. If it's not worthwhile in the income statement, don't put it in the balance sheet and don't cause the problem, right? So that's not comfortable for me as a sort of a notion. It's not also comfortable for me to talk about customization. Either we have measures that have meaning that we should perpetually talk about because the aspects of it have value, or we don't. Having a notion that I like to do a current value measure, but certain things I don't want to remeasure out of that doesn't, either we have to say come up with a new measure that doesn't put those inputs in, but to talk about customizing I think only introduces non-comparability and really diverts the attention from the selection of that measurement basis from the start. And so I'm not completely comfortable with that. I'm also not comfortable in a regard to say that what Hans said. If I have an individual asset that's not used synergistically in the company, and I could get out of it at any time without hindering that asset, hindering the company's ability to produce, I would think under stewardship that unrealized gain or loss, if you continue to collect, it's really important. Because the management could either maximize value by selling or by collecting or using. And any notion that a standalone asset without impediments, that current value isn't a useful metric, is troublesome to me. And there are some aspects in the paper here that sort of suggest that. I do believe that we need to work hard at presentation to deal with some of these issues, where there's longer term investments that I'm going to cash collect for a while, but I might realize later, I could very well think about the normal process of using that as being operating activities, operating outcomes, and a decision to park it for a while, not be non-operating, but still knowledge that you move out of the operations with that unrealized gain or loss by selling it.
Okay. Jen Chow?
Thank you. First of all, thanks, Roger and Ibrick's paper. It's a very good paper. But I still have some comments and the questions. First, relevant to the historical cost, The IPREC recommends that the historical cost does not lead to the statement of any of inputs into historical cost. I'm not sure that, you know, any input into the historical cost should not be restricted. Suppose that impairment, you know, once the PPE or inventory is impaired, actually we have to account for impairment losses. In this case, the original input has to be changed, but this is still based on historical cost. So this is my first question, why we are so sure that historical cost does not lead to any, you know, input restatement or into historical cost. Second, with regard to the current value, it seemed to me that the IPREC recommends that the current value should be related to assets or liability, whether they will be realized or not, and based on the probability of the of being realized or not. From my personal view, I think we should be very cautious on whether current value should be linked to the assets or liability being realized in the future. Because when you purchased an asset, or when you held an asset, you don't know when or whether you will realize or sell in the future. But at this moment, you have to account for these assets or liability, with current value, with other value. So it will really depend on the future realization principle to decide what kind of whether current value should be used. I think we should be very cautious, and also we should be very cautious. Depends on the probability of the being realized of the asset liability. Yeah, for some derivatives, maybe they will happen or realized in the future with low probability. But we have to account for this kind of derivatives because there will be very big risk. I think why we use fair value or current value comparing to historical cost, we need to convene the risk, inherited liability, and assets. Even the probability may be low at this moment, but in the future, maybe a very big risk will arise. So, and the third is relevant to the selection of a measurement basis that is also, you know, discuss the relevance and also discuss of the business model. With regard to the relevance part, the IPREC recommends that in the first place, the selection of the measurement basis should be considered from the perspective of reporting financial performance. I believe that as I mentioned before, first of all, what's the meaning of financial performance? Secondly, really, you know, we are sure that the objective of the financial performance or the objective of reporting financial position is different. I think we should try to avoid and to give the people the impression that both statements or both reporting objective will be different. And we also should try to avoid that different measurement will be adopted for financial position statement and for financial performance. Even now, on the current IFRS 9, it did happen. But in the future, I don't think it's the right way for the board or for the future standards to do so. If so, there are always due, you know, measurement basis in place. it's very difficult for the people to understand why different statements have different measurement bases. And I don't think this is also relevant to relevance.
So again, your plea for the abolition of OCI.
Maybe not relevant to OCI, but I don't think different measurement basis we need for different statements, you know.
If you don't have differences in measurement basis, then you don't need OCI.
OCI is next step. If this issue clear, then some of the OCI issues will be clearly resolved. And finally, relevant to the business model, I appreciate the effort that try to work out that what kind of clear, bright line should be in place, which could be helpful for the ISP or for the people to select what kind of transaction and what kind of assets and liability will result in different, you know, when they select different measurement bases. And the notion here is that we should based on, you know, business model, and the different business model will result in different measurement bases selected. But from my point of view, that as I mentioned before, that first of all, that what's the difference between business model and business activities, and how to define these terms, and if the business enterprises, they change their business model or business activities very frequently, so that means they have to change their accounting system, or especially accounting measurement systems very frequently. Whether it works and whether it will provide useful information for the users. So I also believe that at a conceptual framework, I don't believe we go to so detailed business model based concept or criteria of selection of different measurement bases will have some dangers. Even we believe business activities or business model play some role in selection of business of different measurement bases. I hope it will not be appeared in conceptual framework, but still in some individual accounting standards.
GM.
We generally agree with IFRAC's proposal. We have one comment on the description of historical cost. IFRAC recommend the ED clarify that historical cost is not restated and thus entity specific, and it may be relevant. However, we do not think that the being entity specific is related to historical cost, but rather related to the comparing fair value to value in use, which are all current values, since fair value reflect a market-wide consensus, but value in use reflect the entity specific belief. Why? Current value is based on the updated information at the measurement date. Historical cost is based on the information at the acquisition date. Therefore, it is reasonable that the measurement at historical cost can result in similar assets acquired at different times being reported in the financial statement at different amount. However, it is unreasonable to claim that historical cost is entity specific because of the time differences. Assuming the acquisition date at a certain point of time, the historical cost at that time would be based on a market-wide consensus. Also, time value would not significantly affect historical cost if monetary value is stable. Consequently, we believe that arguing that historical cost is entity-specific and relevant is somewhat inappropriate. Being entity-specific and possibly relevant are related to value in use, not to historical cost.
Rebecca?
I just wanted to use this opportunity to reinforce what Kimberly started off by outlining, in that we wouldn't support expanding the proposals, but this paper has outlined good items that should be considered as part of that additional local project you'll approve shortly on measurement. And, you know, part of just to example, the challenge that we have here is to start to have a slippery slope as to wanting to include other advantages, disadvantages on fair value. We would also highlight that historical costs, there, you know, the paper could better articulate some of the complexities that we're just very familiar with, because we've been applying historical costs for years. In particular, if you think of inventory, there's several, you know, we do allocations and estimates, and that's an accumulated number, and that has not also been brought through. So this is the challenge: if you try to take some steps to further build on what's in the proposal, what that brings, and then would warrant consultation, because we do have very different views on this. So just to reinforce that really these are aspects we hopefully look forward to discussing in further discussions on measurement.
Big Wolf.
Roger, frankly speaking, I support the views expressed by Kimberly and Jinja about whether it is appropriate to clearly say the selection of measurement basis is from the prospective performance report. In February, I attend the EFRAG meetings, tech meeting in Brussels. I asked questions about how to use this idea. I use the example of the current, you know, the insurance project ideas. As I understand, the original idea is more based on balance sheet views. You know, measurement of liability is the key. And then in the past few years, we provide more guidance about the OCI and the unlock of the margins, and more from the perspective of how to report the performance. My question to you is, if we accept your ideas, will you want to change the whole principles of our new insurance standards?
If I can add to this, I have a difficulty accepting that the balance sheet itself would not be a hugely important part of performance. Especially when you look at what happened during the financial crisis, where the banks had tremendous profits at the expense of a horrible gearing of their balance sheet. If you only looked at the income statements, you would have been, which is what happened. People were completely confounded by what was really going on. So the idea that the balance sheet is not an integral part of performance is foreign to me.
That's certainly true in the financial services industry.
Especially true.
No question.
I don't think we're saying the balance sheet isn't important. I think we're saying, and in fact, I think someone said earlier, I don't remember who it was now, that a lot of these arguments about measurement are all about users saying, we don't want to see volatility in the income statement, which isn't actually ever going to materialize. And so, as an example, you know, if you decide that we're going to revalue all factory buildings every year, but we're never going to sell them, we're going to amortize them down to zero, fluctuations in the value of those factory buildings aren't that relevant to users, and they always get in the way of understanding the financial performance of the business. So obviously the balance sheet is very important, but we're saying perhaps too much in the past measurements been focused purely from the balance sheet perspective and not from the income statement perspective. Now, I agree with people who have said that it's undesirable that there are many differences between measurements in the income statement and measurements in the balance sheet. I think what we're saying is you can envisage situations where if the board decided in future they did want to show the value of all factory buildings in the balance sheet, you could nevertheless have a different measurement in performance. I mean, I would hope those cases would be seldom, and normally you would want to use the same measurement in both. And just actually dealing with another couple of points, I understand it would be good to have a final definition of financial performance before we ever embark on this, but we're talking here about an interim stage in a chapter, and if you waited to define financial performance, you would never get the conceptual framework out at all. So I don't regard that as very helpful. And on business model, I don't see there being endless changes in the business model. I mean, I think a company either manufactures widgets or it doesn't. It's not going to change every year. It's got a different business model. You may well see changes in business activities, which are perhaps at a more detailed level. But fundamental business model, whether or not you actually add value by converting one input into another or whatever, that doesn't change very often. But I think there's some very valid, detailed points which we'll reflect on, and perhaps we'll modify this paper and resubmit it to HAMS.
Okay, well, I think we have done all the... Steve has the last 5 minutes.
I think the problem I have with Roger's sum up is that doesn't your paper assume that a definition already exists of financial performance? Because you're referring to it constantly throughout the paper. So could we not only do this if we knew what financial performance is?
Well, I think you have a working understanding of what financial performance is. Otherwise, it would be hard to end up with an income statement.
But I'm not sure we have any understanding what financial performance is. That's the problem.
But I agree, more work needs to be done, which is what I think a lot of people have been saying.
Because is a remeasurement of a pension liability financial performance or not? I think we'll get completely different answers around the table.
Yeah, and again, I repeat, I think you cannot judge performance just by the income statement. Certainly not in the financial sector, but not even in the manufacturing or service sector.
But neither through a difference between two balance sheets.
So well, that's one aspect of performance, though, isn't it? And the trouble is, we talk about performance as being one single thing, but it's actually many different things.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's why it's impossible to give a fitting definition.
I think you're suggesting we have to work on those two chapters together because they're intricately related, and performance is broken. We can't define OCI, and we've got a proliferation of non-GAAP measures that keep on growing and growing and growing.
Which was the whole point of the paper you presented some time ago now on exactly those two things, which I agree with.
And to add to Hans' point, also the cash flow statement is very important to judge financial performance because if a company is producing free cash flow, it has made money. It's a good company. So.
Okay, I think we deserve some lunch after all this deeper conceptual thinking, and we will reconvene in an hour.